If your heart always did what a normal heart should do, if you always play a part instead of being who you really are, then you might just miss the one who's standing there. So instead of passing by, show him that you care. Instead of asking why me and why you, why not we two? 'Cause love don't need a reason. Love don't always rhyme, and love is all we have for now. What we don't have is time.
If we always believe all the madness that we're taught, never questioning the rules, then we're living lies we bought so long ago. How are they to know? It's not who's wrong or right, it's just another way. And it's not about a fight, it's just I wanna stay with you to the end.
This is J.D. Doyle, and welcome to part two of my Michael Callan tribute. And I figured a good way to start it out was sort of a mashup of the three writers of Love Don't Need a Reason, each doing their own version. So that was Michael Callan, Marcia Malamet, and Peter Allen. And leave it to Peter to have the biggest arrangement. I packed all I could into part one, but still have a whole lot to share of Michael's music and the interviews I captured. I'm going to go right to Michael's solo album from 1988, Purple Heart. Now, in 1983, as an AIDS activist, he co-wrote a pamphlet called How to Have Sex in an Epidemic, and he also wrote a song by that name. And to intro this song, I'm using a snippet from an interview with Michael talking about the subject.
We wrote a booklet called How to Have Sex in an Epidemic, which essentially talks about ways to interrupt potential routes of disease transmission. And the bottom line is that one should modify sexual activity to avoid the exchange of certain body fluids.
What are the modifications in order to avoid?
Well, we recommend condoms. We believe that condoms offer the best protection available, short of abstinence.
Machine, packed in tight 501G. the 70s. Things seemed so simple then. So many men, so little time. Ah, I remember when. Where will it end, my friends? Can you tell me who can say? When what is safe and what is not changes day by day.
To return to my interview with Michael's partner, Richard Dworkin, and pick up where I asked him about how the album was received.
I think Purple Heart was pretty well received by the gay community, by the gay press. It was virtually ignored in the mainstream press.
There's a song about you on the album, right?
There is indeed a song about me on the album. Me and Dickie D.
Would you talk about that song?
No. What I most remember about recording the song, Me and Dickie D, is that it was mortifying to participate in. Playing and producing a song written about oneself is something I don't recommend to anyone. I think what helped the process along was the fact that the piano player I had contracted to do the recording backed out at the last minute. And I still think there was some homophobic element involved here. But we were able to find someone, basically while we were standing around in the studio, to play piano on it. And he did just a fantastic job.
I mentioned that the musical chapters of Michael's life overlapped a bit, and in the one on solo and cabaret work was a show he was involved with in April of 1990. It played at the Duplex in New York City and was a tribute to another gay songwriter who had died of AIDS in 1984. That was Bobby Bloom, and in 1990, several of his friends performed in a review of his songs. Besides Michael, the cast included Peggy Gordon, Amy Ryder, and Michael McCassey. The show ran to good reviews, and I love that there were several solo performances by Michael Callan, including this one called When This Fever Breaks.
Doctor came this morning and he shook his head. Nothing's wrong, so why can't I get out of bed? Modern medicine, well, I think it's a joke. 'Cause they can fix an arm, they can make it new, but it ain't my arm that's broke in two. My temperature runs from hot to cold, and the bottle helps when I'm feeling old. Someday I'm gonna think about you and I won't start to shake when this fever breaks. When this fever breaks. When this fever breaks. My resistance was low when you came around. Now you've gone, and that's a pill that won't go down. They say they can't treat what I haven't got, but what I've got is more than the blues, and the only relief is a shot of you. My temperature runs from hot to cold, and the bottle helps when I'm feeling old. Someday I'm gonna think about you, and I won't start to shake when this fever breaks. When acting like a fool, heart. You know that life can be so cruel, heart. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. And don't be fooling with love. Healing. working it out for myself. I put the memories on the dustier shelf I could find. And now I lecture my heart every time you cross my mind. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. You know that life can be so cruel, heart. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. And don't be fooling with love. Well, your call got me all upset again. You spend a dime and now gambler staying away from the track of love. And when my heart cries out, I can't tell it enough. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. You know that life can be so cruel, heart. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. And don't be fooling with love. Every spark brings an explosion. But if I keep the fire away, maybe then I'll be okay. So don't be acting like a fool, heart. You know that life can be so cruel, heart. Don't be acting like a fool, heart. And don't be fooling with. You know that life can be so cruel, heart. Don't be a fool, heart. And don't be fooling with love, at least for a while. I need some time.
From 1990, you heard When This Fever Breaks and Full Heart, sung by Michael Callan and written by Bobby Bloom. I'm going to jump ahead just a bit chronologically to cover a solo performance by Michael, and it was in the AIDS film Zero Patience from 1993. In it, he had a small role as Miss HIV, and there was a short song called Scheherazade Tell a Story, and also a longer version, and you'll hear both.
Oh,
gee, I think that was Michael doing a dance song.
Standing on a corner, hanging around.
Wow.
Knocking out
a cappella.
Well,
ooh.
Oh, what a rhythm. Oh, what a sound. The flirtation. Yeah, 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 the flirtation.
Yeah, the flirtation. Yeah.
Well, people that are walking come to a stop. Some even leave us a dollar.
Yeah.
Some start a clapping.
Some start to bob.
The flirtations.
Yeah, the flirtation.
Yeah, the flirtation.
Out on the street there's confusion, pollution, commotion, and all kinds of noise. But when we start singing, everyone starts swinging, and they're dancing up and down with the
boys.
Dancing up and down with the
boys.
Should you come to see us again and again? Would you strike up conversation?
Yeah.
Could you really think that we're not that kind of men?
The flirtations.
We're only looking for a little sweet satisfaction. The flirtation.
Yeah.
The flirtation.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
some people say we'll go right to the top
if we just change our lyrics.
Yeah.
They say the gay ways will slow down and stop
the flirtations.
We're gonna do it anyway.
We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway.
We're gonna do it anyway.
Flirting, flirting, yes, I'm flirting. Flirting, flirting, yes, I'm flirting.
Sometimes people see us and they're taken aback. We got a sound that everyone enjoys. But suddenly we're belting out my boyfriend's back, and there's gonna be trouble.
Oh my God, they're gay.
Gay, all American, gay, all American, gay, all American, gay, all American, boy, oy, 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 oy,
sissies.
Standing on a corner, hanging around.
Well, we're knocking out a cappella,
fella.
A cappella,
what a rhythm, oh, what a sound.
The flirtations.
Yeah, yeah, the flirtations.
Yeah, the flirtations.
Yeah,
the flirtations.
Yeah, the flirtations.
Yeah, the flirtations.
The fabulous.
The fabulous.
Flirtation.
Yeah.
To know, him is to love, love, love him. Just to see him smile makes my life worthwhile. To know, him is to love, love, love him. And I do.
And I do,
do, do, do, do.
And I do,
do, do, do, do, do, do.
Da, 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 da. I'll be good to him. I'll make lunch for him.
Make lunch for him.
Everyone says there'll come a day when I'll walk alongside of him.
Walk alongside.
Yes, just to know him is to
to love, 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 love him. And I do,
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 and I do, and I do,
and I
do,
and I do,
and I
do, and I do, how blind can he be?
That he
was meant,
was meant for me, 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 me.
If you should ever need me, call me. No matter where you are, no matter how far, just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never, ever worry. And if you should ever get caught short of life's desires, remember, life holds for you one guarantee. You'll always have me. No wind, no rain, no winter's cold.
Got to know him. He's to love, love, love him.
Love him.
Just to see him smile makes my life worthwhile.
Of course, that was the Flirtations, with two tracks from their first CD featuring the Flirt song and a much more campy version of To Know Him Is to Love Him. And I have a bunch more from my interview with Flirtations founder John Arterton. And I began by asking if there was a leader of the group.
Yeah, I guess I was the de facto leader of the group since Elliot and I started it, and then Elliot left, and I wrote almost all the arrangements. And at one point around 1992 or so, we went to a lawyer, an entertainment lawyer, who said that we could continue to operate as a collective, but if you really wanted to keep the group functioning for a long, long time, it might be better to make it a corporation, which we did, and I became the sole owner of the corporation, I guess.
How was material picked for the group to perform?
Well, there were two main things. We didn't want anyone to have to sing words that he didn't agree with. So we had to have complete consensus on every song that we picked. And we wanted every song to have some kind of lyrical contribution to the theme of what we were doing. So sometimes songs took on special meaning because we were gay men in the height of the AIDS crisis, so we could sing My Buddy or I'll Be Seeing You, and it would take on a certain significance. And there were other songs that we sang that were directly kind of political, and songs that talked about other causes that were similar to our cause, and then songs that we thought would just be entertaining. And there's something political about taking a song that everyone has heard and either changing the pronouns or changing the situation so that it becomes obviously a gay kind of parody song.
I was kind of surprised to realize that the Flirts only recorded one of Michael's songs, Living in Wartime. Did the group perform any of them live?
Yeah, well, let's see. Love Don't Need a Reason.
That would be the obvious one for me to think
of.
Do you have any funny stories about Michael being in the group?
Oh, my God. How much time do you have? Well, it's hard to pick one. Michael was so funny that he kept us entertained all the time. He just had a very funny way of being in the world and could really laugh at his illness. I remember towards the end, and he had an infection in his foot that he couldn't shake, and I remember him saying, "Oh, I fought AIDS all these years, and now my damn foot's going to kill me." He frequently turned to Cliff and say, you know, somebody would come up and say, "Oh, Michael, I blah, 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 blah." And Cliff would say, "Oh, I didn't know that you did that, Michael." And Michael would say, "When are you going to learn how famous I am, Cliff?" he was a person who loved a good joke.
Was his humor witty or self-deprecating or campy or?
I would say all of those. He loved to be scandalous. When we would go to a college campus and sing a concert and then go out afterwards to dinner or something with some of the kids from the, you know, from the college group, he would love to just sort of scandalize the undergraduates by asking them questions about their sex lives. but he did it with such a smile on his face, and he would just giggle, you know. And if there were people in the group, and there were, who had at some point had told a story about something that had happened to them, especially in a sexual situation, Michael would, you know, at the drop of the hat in the middle of a dinner say, so Cliff, tell me about that time in Central Park when the police officer, you know, he would just, you know, goad him into getting more and more detail in front of a captive audience.
When did Michael stop performing with the Flirts?
It was the spring of 1993. There was a march on Washington, and we gave a series of three concerts in Washington that weekend, and we also sang on the stage there. And we had some wonderful gay and lesbian performers come out and kind of sing one last time with Michael, Holly Meir and Chris Williamson, Romanowski and Phillips, I remember. And so that was sad. And then that summer, at one point, we had gone on as a quartet without Michael. And I remember we were doing some concerts up in Provincetown, and Michael came up and sat in the audience and watched us sing.
Ooh, how sad.
Yeah. And Michael was very functional. Very much into therapy and in not letting things go. So towards the end of his life, we came to Provincetown, and we had some group therapy sessions with a therapist. And we all got the opportunity to tell Michael how we missed him and how we loved him, and he got to do the same to us.
So was April 93 when he stopped touring with the Flirts, or did he stop a little before that?
He had, in the last year before that, he had done fewer and fewer appearances with us, but he was still pretty much with us when his health would allow.
Yeah. What I'm basing that question on is I saw the group in Houston, but I don't remember what year it was. I do remember that I was aware that Michael was still alive, but not well enough to tour.
Ah, yeah, I would have no idea.
The song "Sometimes Not Often Enough" appears on Michael's Legacy album, and the notes say the Flirts sang backup. Can you tell me about recording that song, and about when was it done, and was it the last recording with Michael?
Yes, it was the last recording with Michael. It was done, I believe, in the spring of 1993, the year Michael died in December of that year. It was recorded in New York City, and Michael had kind of retired from the group in that spring and stopped touring with us. And I guess it might have even been early summer. I believe he was living in Los Angeles at that time, but came back to New York because Richard was producing the album there. And it was, you know, it was emotional singing with Michael and kind of knowing that it might very well be the last time we would do that.
Opened this segment with the song Love Don't Need a Reason, which is by far the best known one by Michael. It's such an important song that I wanted to get some other artists talking about it, and it was one of the songs I asked Holly Near to tell me about when we interviewed in 2010.
I love your recording of Love Don't Need a Reason.
Michael Callan was one of the founders and singers in a gay men's group called the Flirtations. And one of the songs that Michael loved and sang, he had written with two other writers.
Peter Allen and Marcia Malamet.
Thank you. I was having a brain pause there. And I loved his version of Love Don't Need a Reason. So kind of to honor him after his death, we did a version of it. And on the recording, it started out with Michael's voice singing, and then I pick up the song after the first phrase or two.
So many things I want to do, so many dreams still to come true, so much to give. I want to be all I can be, I want to keep you here with me, I want to live.
I think that was a stunning touch, and his voice just makes me melt.
It's really something, isn't it?
And that particular intro by Michael can only be found on Holly's recording. I want to get back to Marcia Malamet to hear more about the song Love Don't Need a Reason.
Who wrote the words and who wrote the music, or how was it broken down?
Funny story. You know, Peter and I both are composers, and we both play piano. So we're at his house, and of course, I defer to Mr. Allen. There was no way I was going to sit at the piano and just sit there and have Peter throw out a note or two. I wanted him to be comfortable. I mean, you know, it was Peter Allen. So he sat, and Michael threw out lyrics, and he, you know, worked on it. And then as the premier gentleman that he is, he got up, he said, Marcia, okay, you take over. It was just very magnanimous of him. It was just very generous of him. So he got up, and I sat at the piano, and I started doodling, too, and I continued what he brought in. So it was really a collaboration. He did, I'd say, you know, 60 or 75% of the music, and the rest was me, and he collaborated with Michael on the lyric, but it was mostly Michael. That was how we wrote it, and it came very quickly. It was one of the fastest songs I've ever written. And from there, I don't know how the AIDS Walk people found out about it, but it was the theme song for the first one.
When you finished, did the three of you realize the masterpiece that it was?
You know, you feel it, you know it, but you never know when it comes to an audience response. We knew we had something beautiful. And I don't know if we went to how important it would be and how, to this day, I have stories about how it's changed people's lives. However, at that moment, we were just pretty jazzed about writing a really good song, as songwriters, you know, feel when they really nail it. And we nailed it. And that's really it. But to project how important the song would be and how it would be that it's a theme song for 10 or 11 AIDS walks. And then, of course, people have recorded it. Gay choruses all over the world have recorded it. Barbara Cook recorded it. Holly. There's like 25, 30 choruses and artists that have recorded the song. So we didn't know. We knew we had something beautiful, but we didn't know that would take on a life of its own.
Do you have any stories about what you have noticed about the impact of the song?
Yeah. When we got called to do the AIDS walks, and Michael was called to sing them after Peter died, when Michael sang, I always was with him playing the keyboards. So I'll never forget, it was one of the first times we did San Francisco. It's always at the beginning of the walk when you have the ceremony and there are people sitting on stage and, you know, civic leaders are introduced and sponsors are introduced and then they call Michael up to sing. Well, we sang it. We did it. Michael sang it. And afterwards, we're standing around waiting for our lift or, you know, talking with people. And this one young guy comes over to us. And he was in tears, and he said to Michael, do you know how you saved my life with this song? And Michael, of course, was very moved. I was almost in tears. And he proceeded to tell us a story about how his parents rejected him, and he had to go to a clinic in some other city to be treated. And he asked his parents to listen to the song. It really got to them. And they brought him back home. Wow. And he was with his family then. So, I mean, when you hear stories like that, that a song turned this kid's life around and he was reunited with his family and his parents opened up their arms and let him back into the house and, you know, helped him because of this song. I mean, whew, it was pretty heavy. It was pretty deep. And that was the first time I witnessed something like that. You know, after Michael died, I started singing it. They used to call me to do it. I sang it at Sheep Meadow Park in front of like 25, 30,000 people. And again, people came up to me afterwards, oh, that song. And it was sort of like a calling card for love. That's the way I see it, of understanding, of compassion, and of love. It never ceases to amaze me how art and how this song, in particular, could really move people and change the way they feel and think about something. It just boggles the mind. And I guess in that moment when we wrote it, we did hit the home run. But, you know, I have to say, I haven't written many perfect songs, but that song is. I always miss Michael. And the songs that we wrote will live on for sure, for sure. And, you know, it's like his energy, his passion, his intelligence. He was so bright, but so enthusiastic about life, about art, about his singing, about his work. He was so bigger than life. Every time I think of him, you know, I had such amazing memories, such incredible memories. He was bigger than life, and he affected people in his legacy. You know, you hear people talk about him in such glorious terms, and it's true. He was one of a kind.
At least 8 GLBT choruses have recorded the song, with that being the earliest by the New York City Gay Men's Chorus in 1991.
Please tell me about the song you wrote with Michael and Elliot Sokoloff called Just Look in Our Eyes.
Well, Elliot is another very talented composer, scorer, and we were all friends. And Elliot's gay. So the three of us were gay, and hey, you sit down and write a song. I don't think there was any sort of deep meaning or reason why we sang it. I would say it was just up for us. Either Michael and I wrote beginnings of it, and then we brought it in to Elliot to finish it and to demo it, because Elliot had a little studio in his apartment. So he became the producer. Yeah, and I think this gentleman, Ernest Cole, recorded it as a disco song, no less.
I know, I have it.
So you never know. You know, people are dancing to it, so it's all cool.
Did you write any other songs with Michael, and were they recorded?
Nope. It was those four.
Wow. Three classics out of four.
Not bad. I'll take those odds any day. Yeah. Just he alone. You talk about living your truth. That guy lived his truth to the nth degree. So out there and so proud of who he was and so full of life and full of love. I mean, he had rage, but he also, coupled with the rage, was the love and the passion for his people, for being gay, for the struggle, for his friends. He was just a very unique, brilliant, creatively and intellectually a brilliant person.
And this is J.D. Doyle, closing part two, with a demo of Michael singing Just Look in Our Eyes, which he wrote with Marcia and Elliot Sokoloff.
In a world that don't play fair, do we dare to end the lies. We have big dreams. We see this world as it could be, a world where lovers don't apologize. Why can it be? Why can't we end this masquerade? I want to believe, but I'm afraid of the look in your eyes. Down or say we shouldn't be, but somehow our love survives. Why can it be? Why can't we end this masquerade? I want to believe, but I'm afraid of the look in your eyes. I try to run. Everything's changed. I'm gonna love you. Can't they see? This must be just looking up. Just looking around. Can't they see? This must be. Just looking up. Just looking up. Just looking up.